It isn't so hard as a general rule to find instances and examples of lies in culture, in the media, and for that matter, in our lives. Truth is, after all, a slippery concept, famously, notoriously difficult to define. And people often talk about my truth, or my highest truth, or what is true for me. And all of those ideas, which have their place, tend to obscure the fact that some things are true and some things are not. And that when it comes to certain facts, and even our tradition teaches certain ideas, there isn't so much your truth and my truth. There is the truth and a lie. So, for example, those of you who are interested in reading a perceptive article about the way the media covers Israel and doesn't cover Israel, you can read Hillel Halkin's article in the most recent Commentary magazine, where he talks about the shooting of Mohammed El-Dura, a very famous case of a child who was shot by Israeli soldiers, except that he wasn't. That in fact, the shooting and the murder, if indeed it was a murder, and there's questions about that as well, was proved not to have been done by Israelis, but by Palestinians, a correction that appeared almost nowhere, and when it appeared, of course, appeared on page 90, as opposed to the original story, which appeared on page 1. Then you had an issue that brought the question of truth and lies to the front pages again, and that was through the medium of Oprah's book club, when she chose a memoir called A Million Little Pieces by James Fry, which I am now pleased retrospectively to say I didn't read and don't intend to, because while it might have been a fascinating autobiography, from what I understand, it was so-so as fiction and should have been on the fiction shelf. Because he took and embellished his life, reminding us of the wonderful Yiddish proverb that truth never dies, but it leads a very difficult life. So truth lives, but millions of people bought this book assuming it was true, and then following the revelation that in fact there weren't just exaggerations and distortions, but there were many lies contained in this book. And it was at first marketed as a novel, and when it didn't sell as a novel, got marketed as a memoir. When that was discovered, many, many people said, well, truth is such a slippery idea. What is true for you might not be true for me. And this is how he experienced his life, and who are we to say it's not true? That's not the way the Jewish tradition views truth. Chotamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the seal of God, the Midrash teaches us, is truth. And remember, the seal is what you would stamp on your letter so that people would know it was from you. So in other words, if you want to find God's signature, God's seal in this world, you look at truth. Lies are not where God dwells. And even if you say, well, a lot of it was true, I point you to the Talmud in Sanhedrin, where we are taught by the rabbis, he who adds to truth subtracts from truth. In other words, if you go out and you see that it's drizzling, and you come in and say it's pouring, you just lied. even though all you were doing was adding to the truth, making it more dramatic, giving it a punch, serving it, as Cagney memorably said, with relish. Still, it's not true. And we start to lose the ability to distinguish between what is true and what is not if we think that truth is something to be used for effect. The truth is instrumental, that the point of truth is to serve a purpose rather than the point of our truth being to serve truth. Moses goes to Pharaoh, and he goes in the name of truth. And the lie that we spoke about earlier, that Pharaoh is a god and controls the destiny of the Israelites and of Egypt, is exposed for what it is. It's a lie. What our tradition teaches us is that it is important everywhere in our lives to express the truth, especially in those places where the truth costs us something, especially when to tell the truth is difficult. Reb Lev Yitzchak of Berdichev, when his synagogue was confessing to sins on Yom Kippur, said, you know, he stopped them in the middle of the confessional. He said, I know that we are in the middle of the confessional, but I want you to know that there was a time when Jews told the truth in the marketplace and they lied in the synagogue because they confessed to sins they didn't commit. Now, he said, told the truth in the marketplace, lied in the synagogue. Now, unfortunately, you're all telling the truth in the synagogue and now you're going to go and lie in the marketplace. In other words, where it costs us in the marketplace, in interactions with others, that's where truth matters most. That's where the tendency to shave, to change, to lie is most powerful. It isn't true that truth has to be brutal. It isn't true that truth has always to be spoken. But we have gone very far in the pendulum in society, in government, in media, in personal interactions, towards the side of not telling the truth. I wonder how many children know, as we used to say all the time, that it's wrong to lie. And that sentence requires no explanation. That it is wrong to lie. That there are times, of course, when powerful circumstances compel you to say something that isn't true, but those times are rare and you don't feel good about them. But that most of the time, what our tradition demands from us is emet. Truth. And you know, if you know the Hebrew, emet, aleph is the first letter, mem is the middle letter, and taf is the last letter. That's not only true of the word emet, it's true of the Hebrew alphabet. Aleph is the first letter of the alphabet, mem is the middle letter, and taf is the last letter, because truth is the beginning, middle, and end of what we should strive for, both from ourselves and from each other. But of course, you can't demand it of someone else if you don't demand it of yourself. And part of what I think the epidemic of untruth is about, and you see it in college as well as in business, you see it from students who pull papers off the internet, and from businessmen who misrepresent what they have or what they sell, from parents who don't tell the truth to their children or about their children, and from children who have learned from the prevalence of untruth about them that it's what you get, not what you say, that matters. All of this stems from a sense that you don't violate your own soul when you lie. But according to our tradition, Elohai nishama shenatata bi taharahi, God, the soul you have given me is pure. And what I do with it in this world, the way in which I continue to purify it or sully it, is often on the basis of what comes out of my mouth. Over 2,000 years ago, the first Jewish philosopher of Alexandria, Philo, said, "What honor can there be where there is no truth? What honor can there be where there is no truth? What honorable people can there be if they lie?" The Jewish tradition takes this very seriously. You know that there is something in Judaism called Gnevat Da'at, which literally means stealing someone else's thoughts. It has to do not even with lying to someone, but with misleading them. So that you know, even though you haven't explicitly lied, you've planted a thought in their head that isn't true. Many things are forbidden in the Torah. You know that. I don't have to start listing all the things that the Torah says you're not supposed to do. But there's only one thing that the Torah says you should keep far away from. Midavar sheker tirchak. Keep far away from falsehood. Because if you keep far away from that which is not true, other things miraculously fall into place. And I say this because even though all of us have in ourselves a fundamental commitment to truth, in the society we live in, it needs bolstering again and again and again. I didn't see the show, but I am awfully glad that Oprah brought that author back on her show to tell him that she was disappointed and hurt that his book was filled with lies. It was a good lesson for America that it does make a difference, that lies are violations of God's world and also and often of other human beings, and that we need to practice in small ways so that when the pressure is on, we can still tell the truth with ourselves, with our children. Remember, every time you say to your child, "Tell them I'm not here," when the phone rings, you're teaching them to lie. And you're teaching them to lie for you. So even though it may seem trivial, that's how character is built. You don't build character by going before Pharaoh. You have to have your character built before Pharaoh comes along. This is a week, as you know, and I will talk a little bit more about it later on in the announcements about some of the programs that we have upcoming. This is a week in which a regime built largely on lies won an election in an area contiguous to our homeland. Now, I'm no political prophet. I don't know what this will mean. And maybe in some way it serves the cause of truth to see what it is that people believe. But I do know that we have a powerful obligation to speak truth in the world. And you can't speak truth only when it suits your purpose. You have to speak it even when you don't like it. And you can't train your children to tell you the truth but lie to other people. You have to just teach them to tell the truth. Or else we leave truth to coin a phrase, in a million little pieces. So I hope that this strange concatenation, this coming together of lots of different events, reminds us of something that we knew when we were kids, which is that it's good to tell the truth, and it is wrong to lie. We stand before the Ark every Shabbat, and we talk about Keshot, 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 that God is a God of Keshot, and God's Torah is a Torah of Keshot, and we want to lead lives of Keshot, and Keshot is the Aramaic word for truth. Again and again and again, Emet, beginning, middle, and end of the alphabet, of the world, and if we are wise, and if we are good, of our lives. Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.